Today on Vox Talks Economics, when populists expel the experts. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics. Remember, subscribe. Follow us on Instagram as well.
The people who are arguing that we should get out are concerned to ensure that the working people of this country at last get a fair deal. I think the people in this country have had enough of experts from organisations with acronyms saying that they know what is best and getting it consistently wrong. It's a faith, Faisal, in the British people.
Now, if you're British, you might remember Michael Gove, a decade ago now, a politician arguing for Brexit by saying that British people should trust their feelings rather than the warnings they were hearing from experts, many of whom, as you remember, were economists.
And any federal bureaucrat who resists this change will be removed from office immediately. Because we are draining the swamp. It's very simple. And the days of rule by unelected bureaucrats are over.
In 2025, the populist revolution in the US wants deep cuts to the federal bureaucracy. Now, in these cases, and in many others in recent history, populist politicians complain about a bloated, unelected, administrative state that they say frustrates their ability to deliver on their promises. So, how do they deal with this, and what are the consequences when they do? An analysis of Italian local politics that was published recently might help us understand what is happening in the US now and what might happen next. Mattia Vanoni of King's College was one of the researchers. I'm with him now. I've come down to his office. Mattia, welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Hello.
Mattia, populism, first of all. We need to do our definitions. Populism, as you define it, is it about policies or is it about something else?
It's not about a clear policy agenda. So populists tend to implement so-called commitment policies, which are electorally more beneficial to them given the widespread lack in politicians. In other words, they tend to go for simple and easy policies to monitor. So closed border, building walls, citizenship income, and so on. And they tend to stick to them. In this way, voters will feel reassured and they don't have to trust the government to do what they are supposed to do. We can see already some evidence of that in Trump's agenda, for instance.
And these attributes, they can define populism.
Yes. So in the literature, we see there are like three types of approaches. A more ideational one, which is populism as an ideology based on the division between the pure people and the corrupt elite.
Uh-huh.
And what they argue is that politics should be the expression of the will of the people. There is also a more strategic definition, which is what we use, that see populist as a political strategy to win the election by creating a close ties between the candidate and voter. So like the man of the people rhetoric.
Got it. Now, what sort of events in the US and Europe are responsible for why this type of populism has become so attractive to voters?
So what we see, like those huge economic, technological, cultural shocks leads to an erosion of voters' trust in representative democracy. When trust is high, we see that citizens entrust policymakers to make decisions. So a trusted model of democracy. So the emphasis here is on the competence of the politician. When trust is low, instead, voters will want to take back control over policymaking, demanding simple policy commitments that are easy to monitor. And those populist politicians tend to intercept this demand and run for office with those simple commitments.
Yeah, that phrase, take back control, I remember that one. Now, your definition, saying that voters want these simple policies, and we've heard quite a lot of them in the last few years. We're hearing them from the US now, building a wall, lowering the price of eggs. Why do they need these policy commitments to be so simple?
They're simple because they need to be easy for the voters to monitor, which are central in this low trust environment.
Right.
Moreover, once in office, populists tend to stick to their policy commitment. However, as we see, those simple policies, they might lead to inefficiencies and suboptimal outcomes.
Yes. Now, in your work, you also predict that resistance to these policies will come from bureaucrats, the bureaucrats whose job it is to implement them, the civil service, these federal employees. Why are they going to resist, and how are populists going to react when they do?
The idea here is that these types of policies that are simple, they are by definition incompatible with adjustments or alternative.
Right.
So the populist politician is not willing to have their policy undergo expert assessment. So they have a strict preference for non-expert bureaucrats that, regardless what happened, will carry on their agenda.
And so they prefer those kind of bureaucrats, and they are going to make sure those bureaucrats are in place, I guess. Because I was looking into Project 2025, which is that huge document that 2 years ago set out the sorts of policies that the Trump administration would implement. There's a lot of it. Here's a quote from Project 2025.
The president must recognize that whoever holds a government position sets its policy. To fulfill an electoral mandate, he must therefore give personnel management his highest priority. The specific deficiencies of the federal bureaucracy are rooted in the progressive ideology that unelected experts can and should be trusted to promote the general welfare.
So this idea that the president has control over the bureaucracy and should use that control, this is the sort of thing you're describing.
Yes, exactly. Think about the email that was sent in February, where they were asking federal government workers to list all their accomplishments in the past week or resign. More recently, in his very long address to Congress, Trump mentioned getting rid of the waste in government spending as one of the main goals. On their website, the DOGE states that they have already saved $130 billion. Those figures cannot be verified, but still, that is the rhetoric. If we take a step back at the first Trump world presidencies, we can see that when they got into power, they really couldn't believe it themselves, almost, and so they didn't know what to do. So it took a lot of time to come up with a plan. Right after 35 weeks of the presidency, Trump had announced it only 40% of the main political appointees. Same time, Mr. Obama had already announced almost 78%. And when they tried to place some loyalists in key position, there was some compromise. The EPA was a good example. At the beginning was Scott Pruitt, who was a loyalist. But then what happens? He was pushed out and he was replaced by Andrew Wheeler, who was a loyalist. But still, he could try to strike a balance between making the agency looking more presentable. So, importantly, back then, they didn't fully understand the importance of the bureaucratic machine, but there was a lot of resistance from the bottom up to their agenda. For better or worse, now they learned their lesson, and not only did they start to appoint pure loyalists everywhere, but also they tried to push the agenda of dismantling the bureaucratic state. One of the main points of Project 2025 is indeed to dismantle the administrative state.
If you want to find out more about the history of American bureaucrats, then head over to our companion podcast, Vox Dev Talks, and the episode called State Capacity and the Development of the US from January 2024. Nicola Mastrarocco explains how the emergence of a bureaucracy in the US helped economic development during the 19th century.
Okay, so we're going to talk about your research that came out a couple of years ago, and you investigated a different environment here. You wanted to test, though, whether a populist who wins an election is actually more likely to replace its bureaucrats. So which elections were you focusing on? What was your data? What time period does this data cover?
In our paper, A Costly Commitment, we study the consequences of populism on economic performance and the quality of bureaucracy. We use electoral and administrative data from 1,000 Italian municipalities over more than 20 years. We assemble a rich data set on municipal election, mayoral candidates and partisan affiliation of politicians, economic performance and public procurement data, and finally, bureaucratic composition.
And you're looking for the effects of the election of a populist, but there are no random election results. How can you make that causal link?
That is a very good point. Identify the causal effect of electing a populist government on our outcomes is very hard, because you can argue that those municipalities that are governed by a populist mayor will be different, according to many observables, to those that are run by someone else, a non-populist mayor. However, what we think, if we compare those municipalities where a populist candidate barely won with those where a populist candidate barely lost, those are comparable. So these are called close election sharp regression discontinuity design, and they are very common in estimating the effect of winning on a downstream of outcomes. The idea here is, again, that those municipalities are comparable. And also we have a validation test, and we find that those units are similar with respect to a bunch of observable characteristics. Importantly, what we find is that this is a compound treatment effect, meaning that populist candidate, they are also more likely to be incumbent. So what we do, we also compare within incumbency status, and the effects remain the same.
How do you know that the populists that get elected mean what they say, that the election of a populist means populist policies, which is really what we're interested in?
That is a very good point. And one of the reasons why we use this context is that Italian municipalities represent a good case study. Because first of all, there are many populist parties in Italy, so it makes it less arbitrary for us to attribute that feature to the candidate. Second, the executive power is highly concentrated, so usually what they want is what is done. And then we see that those managers were interested in, and they play a central role in the administration of the policy. Importantly, in Italy, all the populist parties have showed very tight control over the members. So usually there is a strong link between the agenda of the party and the agenda of the candidate, even at the local level.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you a difficult question, because as you say, there were several populist movements, weren't there? There was the Northern League, the Five Star Movement. What type of policies? Is there any typical sort of policy that the populists were implementing?
That's a very good question. In our paper, we look more at the quantifiable consequences of the policy, so like the expenses and so on, because of two reasons. One, theoretically, what populism is defined as a thin ideology, so they don't have a clear agenda when it comes to policy. And second, it's very hard to find that comparable data on the content of the policy. But what we do when we dig more into the data, and we didn't do anything with those fundings as of yet, is that we look at what they spend their money on. And what we see is that the populist mayor tend to have a smaller portfolio of expenditure, and it tend to stay stable over time, which is in line, again, with the commitment argument that we're making.
So after a populist is elected, what happens to economic performance?
We use a free measure of performance. So first of all, we calculate the percentage of procurement contracts with cost overruns. So all those contracts that we ended up to pay more for that, where payments are greater than the adjudicated cost. And also we have the accumulation and the repayment of debt. And we find that when a populist mayor goes to power, this leads to a smaller repayment of debt, a larger share of procurement contract with cost overruns.
We're interested in what happens to the bureaucrats here. Was there a higher turnover amongst the bureaucrats that were implementing these policies?
Yeah, the answer is that, because what we thought is that given our argument, we expected that when a populist mayor goes into power, what they do, they try to get rid of experts and replacing them with non-experts. And what they find is exactly that. As a result of a populist mayor being in power, we find higher turnover among top bureaucrats, an increase by 50%. And then we see also a decrease in the percentage of bureaucrats with a postgraduate degree.
So one of the things that comes across in Project 2025 is the complaint that it's really hard to get rid of bureaucrats even if you want to. So in this case, the bureaucrats who left, did they jump or were they pushed?
They were pushed because our expectation is that those mayors will get rid of expert bureaucrats. But it could also be that they leave because they don't want to work for a populist mayor. So we need to disentangle the effect of whether they're pushed to leave or they leave by themselves. Our data just allow to do so because we can have all the reason why they leave in the data. We categorize those reasons according whether they were forced to leave or they left on their own. And what we find is that the effect is driven by the former. So they were forced to leave by the mayor.
What are we really arguing here, though? Are we making the argument that having this bureaucracy is always a good thing and it must be protected?
Not always. So we have a whole research strand on legislative complexity and whether it's good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
So bad complexity has important consequences. But for instance, the cost of complexity in the US tax code costs taxpayers billions of dollars every year. And bad complexity is usually but the consequences of bureaucratic inefficiency. We talk about my co-author Massimo. They have a paper where they look at the shift from the First and the Second Republic in Italy in the 90s and how bureaucratic inefficiency led to the overproduction of complex legislation. When bureaucracy is efficient, laws are implemented on time and well, so voters can assess the quality of the law and the competence or the effort of politicians. Conversely, when bureaucracy is inefficient, this assessment is not possible, and so we have those politicians that are more incentivized to propose low-quality reforms. This led to the doubling of the Italian legislation in just 10 years, with the double of the number of bills per MP, with the number of pages of the laws going up like four times and things like that. So no, bureaucracy is not always good.
I've encouraged you to draw a line between what happened in the Italian populist movement over the last couple of decades and what's happening now with the Department of Government Efficiency in the US and this sort of this Trump bureaucratic revolution. Is that fair? Can studying Italian municipal elections tell us much about what's happening in the Trump administration when it's a different country with different laws, different policies, and a much bigger scale in the US?
So there are some similarities here. First of all, what we see in Italian municipality is a central government that had a high level of discretion and authority, which is the case in the US.
Mm-hmm.
Also, on the bureaucracy side, we see a good mix between political appointees, so those public managers then we sued, and civil servants. Based on those two similarities, we can learn something from our paper that can be applied to what is happening going on in the US.
As I recall, there's one reason that the US created its centralized bureaucracy in the 19th century, and that was precisely to provide continuity in policy and so that we couldn't have political appointees. What are the consequences if we change our thinking about that and think that the bureaucracy in any country at any time should be upended after an election?
Yeah, so that's a really nice assist to our research because we have a paper when we look at the creation of the civil service in the US states. And what we find is that it is more likely to have the creation of an independent bureaucracy in times of divided government, exactly to give that policy continuity. But now what we see in the US is the opposite. We see the use of those commitment policies that are at the center of Trump's agenda and the attempt to dismantle the bureaucratic state as a consequence. This will have long-term consequences as there are the direct effect of a populist government on the economy, but also the indirect effect of a loyalist, not expert, bureaucracy. So we can expect a vicious circle between the low quality of bureaucracy in the long run and the economic performance of the last year. These vicious circles will actually be made even worse by those incentives to overproduce complex regulation.
Your job must be very interesting at the moment, Mattia. Thank you for talking about this today.
Thank you.
Well, we've got a long reading list for you this week. First of all, the paper, A Costly Commitment, Populism, Economic Performance and the Quality of Bureaucracy. And the authors, Luca Bellodi, Massimo Morelli, Mattia Vanoni. It was published in the American Journal of Political Science in 2023. The discussion paper version of that, an earlier version of the same paper, published by CPR, is discussion paper 15929, The Costs of Populism for the Bureaucracy and Government Performance. That's from 2021. Also 2021, a Foxy U column about the same paper, with the same authors, called Expelling the Experts, The Cost of Populism for Bureaucratic Expertise and Government Performance. If you want to know more about Project 2025, you can download the whole thing. There's a document called Mandate for Leadership, The Conservative Promise. That was published in 2023. It's free, but it is 920 pages long. Have you read it, Mattia?
No, not yet. Not all of it, at least.
I don't think anyone has.
Vox Talks Economics is a Torg Normal production. The assistant producer is Megan Bieber, and our editor is Andrei Zagarian. Next week on Vox Talks Economics, what does it take to live a meaningful life?